This is DW News live from Berlin. Tributes for the late US Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But her death has already ignited a partisan battle over who will nominate her successor. We'll have more on the latest issue to divide the US. Also on the programme, Belarusian police crack down on democracy protesters. Further anti-government demonstrations in Belarus are followed by more arrests targeting women. We'll cross over to our correspondent in the Belarusian capital for the latest. And the reintroduction of strict social distancing measures sparks protests in London. Hundreds of people gather in the British capital, breaking rules limiting public gatherings. I'm Pablo Folilias. Welcome to the show. Mourners have been laying flowers outside the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. in tribute to the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She died on Friday at the age of 87 from pancreatic cancer. Ginsburg had spent 27 years as a member of the court and had built up a formidable reputation as its most liberal judge. Her death has led not only to an outpouring of tributes, but it's also kicked off a political battle about who will replace her. US President Donald Trump says he wants to fill her post with a conservative judge as soon as possible.
Days before her death, Ruth Bader Ginsburg told her family she wished her Supreme Court replacement would be selected by the next president. Ginsburg was the leading liberal voice on a court bench that already has a conservative majority. They decide on major issues such as abortion and voting rights. The court can even pick the president, as happened in 2000 in the case of Bush versus Gore. Current Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden said Ginsburg's successor should be chosen after November's election.
But there is no doubt, let me be clear, that the voters should pick the president and the president should pick the justice for the Senate to consider.
But President Donald Trump says he will fill the vacant court seat without delay. Just weeks ago, he announced a list of potential replacements to become his third Supreme Court pick. Justice Ginsburg herself was critical of the politics behind the nomination process.
I don't know what it will take, but we really should get back to the way it was when people were examining the qualifications of someone to be a judge, rather than trying to guess how they would vote.
Flags were at half-mast across the country, and in front of the Supreme Court, flowers piled up as public tributes were made from across the political divide. The search for Ginsburg's successor threatens to be less dignified.
Well, joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Rachel Rizzo. She's a political analyst and director of programs at the Truman National Security Project. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the show. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death comes just over 6 weeks before the U.S. presidential election. How will it impact the race?
Well, this is the last thing that we needed in a political season which is already extremely heated. What we can expect, as Mitch McConnell has mentioned, the president is going to attempt to, appoint a new nominee to the Supreme Court. And Mitch McConnell has said, you know, immediately after Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, that he would grant a vote to President Trump to appoint a new Supreme Court judge. What we don't know is if he will have the votes available to do that. Senators Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Mitt Romney have all been on record saying that a new judge shouldn't be voted on before a new president. The question is if they're going to stick with those comments or try to push someone through before the election or immediately after.
So it does sound like the battle is, in many respects, already underway. I mean, essentially just hours after the death of Ginsburg. Do we have any idea of when we can perhaps expect that replacement judge to be named?
I think we can expect it in the short course of a few days. There are already names that have been floated in the past that are starting to pop up pretty quickly here. Amy Coney Barrett, a conservative Seventh Circuit judge, is one of them. Amul Thapur is another. Barbara Lagoa. These are all conservative judges who, you know, would potentially replace what was a progressive voice on the Supreme Court, a true vanguard and titan and tireless advocate of progressive causes like abortion and women's rights and gay rights. So the question is who that replacement might be, but the certainty of it is that it would be someone who is conservative.
Right. Well, you've mentioned there some of the issues that that would be of importance to, of course, whoever replaces Ginsburg. How important is that role in shaping the U.S. In the years to come, Rachel?
It's extremely important. I mean, one of the big questions over the Trump presidency, he's been able to appoint two conservative judges to the Supreme Court. And the questions that a lot of, you know, progressive advocates and Democrats throughout the country ask is, you know, what does this mean for progress that we've made on issues through, you know, in the past? Issues like, you know, Roe v. Wade, which decided, you know, abortion in the United States years ago. What does that mean for the future of, you know, women's rights and gay rights and things like affirmative action? And so I think those are big questions that I think we're going to be answering and asking in the coming months. The hope is that senators will hold back before voting on this and we see what happens in the November election. But, you know, really, this is politics at play. Politics are going to be important here. And I think we have a very heated political season ahead of us.
Rachel Rizzo in Washington, D.C., thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's take a look at some other stories making news around the world. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has posted another picture of himself recovering in hospital. The caption of the photo he shared on the social media network Instagram said his path to recovery was clear, although long. Navalny is being treated in a Berlin hospital after being poisoned with a nerve agent that's been used before against Kremlin critics. The Greek government says over 200 people have tested positive for coronavirus at a new refugee shelter on the island of Lesbos. Europe's largest refugee camp burnt down earlier this month, leaving some 12,000 people homeless. The migration ministry says three quarters of them have today moved to a new camp, which is already full. Pro-democracy protesters are rallying in Thailand to demand the Prime Minister's resignation. Tens of thousands of people are gathered near the Royal Palace during what's planned to be a weekend-long protest. Demonstrators are calling for an end to military rule and a return to democracy. Well, Belarusian police detained around 250 people on Saturday during a women's march in the capital, Minsk. The weekly demonstrations have become some of the largest anti-government protests since a disputed presidential election triggered unrest in Belarus. But police have begun to round up female protesters in recent weeks.
Only cowards beat women, shout hundreds of women as they face down the police. But the authorities no longer want to let this weekly march go ahead unchallenged. Police barely seem to hesitate as they packed women into their trucks. Even 73-year-old Nina Bahinskaya was briefly detained. Her defiance of the authorities has made her an icon of these protests, overwhelmingly led by women. It was scary at the beginning, but then you get used to it. What can you do? I'm more scared about living with the feeling that I did nothing when all this was happening in my country. The crackdown is getting harsher by the day. And there is still little sign the riot police are deserting President Alexander Lukashenko, who demonstrators say rigged the August 9 presidential election. What is democracy? It's when the majority has voted for the president. No, nobody voted for him. Women taking part in opposition rallies now not only have to fear for their safety, but also that of their children. Authorities have been threatening to remove children from protester parents, a warning that's only been fueling the anger on the streets.
Well, Europe is seeing a surge in new coronavirus infections, with many countries recording their highest rates since early in the pandemic. Germany's daily number of new infections exceeded 2,200, a figure not seen since early April. Meanwhile, France's rates are soaring well past the 10,000 mark per day. And in some parts of England, new stricter measures have been introduced as infections rise to levels not seen since April. With a possible second lockdown looming there in England, protesters gathered in London to voice their opposition to vaccines, social distancing measures and the requirement to wear masks in public. Many carried placards denying the existence of the pandemic. Well, for more on this, let's bring in our correspondent in London, Birgit Maas. Hi, Birgit. Now, there have been more than 4,000 new coronavirus infections in the UK, and that's just in the past 24 hours. What measures to deal with the surge in numbers are people in the UK expecting?
Well, they're probably looking at the north of England, and they're seeing that there, for example, hospitality, bars, restaurants, they have to close earlier, and people are really urged not to congregate in large numbers and to really stick to the social distancing measures. So people are looking at what's happening there. It's called the government's whack-a-mole strategy that the British government has tried to impose local lockdowns where they have seen flare-ups, particular flare-ups of the virus. However, now it seems to be spreading, so not just in the north of England. The numbers are evening out across the whole country. We've seen problems in Scotland and also in other parts of England. So people are probably thinking that something like in the north of England is going to happen nationwide. So the talk is about stricter rules for going out, that bars and restaurants might only allow table service, so that it's being prevented that people are too close to each other. And I think probably mostly when alcohol is concerned, so they want to prevent people, situations getting out of control and people getting too close to each other, basically.
Well, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said he's been warning about a second wave for weeks now. Has he done enough to prevent this rise in infections?
Well, not only Prime Minister Boris Johnson has his eye on the second wave. I mean, experts across Europe have been warning that in autumn, and we are now approaching autumn, the schools are starting and people are returning to their workplaces, that the virus might surge again. And this is exactly what has happened here. In Britain, the people are looking at the government, and a lot of people are very, very critical. In polls, it's shown that a lot of British people, a majority, are not happy how the government has handled the crisis. And experts are pointing out that not enough has been done in order to prevent this new surge, and that, for example, the testing capacity is not there, that should be here, that it would be clear that once children go back to school and people go back to the office, that people would want to have more tests. Also, right. The tracking system has been a problem here, so lots of criticism for the British government.
Birgit Maas in London, thank you. Well, if Bayern are the Bundesliga's perennial champions, Borussia Dortmund are its constant nearly men. The runners-up in three of the last four seasons hosted Borussia Mönchengladbach in the late game on Saturday. Gladbach also had a strong season last time out, finishing up in the Champions League spots. Which of the Borussias would prevail?
There were more than a few bricks missing in the famous yellow wall as Dortmund kicked off their season. But even without that reliably solid foundation, the home side went in front on 35 minutes, Giovanni Reina slotting home to make it 1-0 at the break. A first ever Bundesliga goal for the young English-born American. Nine minutes into the second half, a polite but pointed exchange of views between Erling Haaland and Jadon Sancho over who should take a penalty kick. In the end, the English-born Norwegian slotted home from the spot. A breakaway from a corner saw Sancho lay on Haaland to seal the 3 points, and the pair was suddenly best of friends. A frightening burst and pass from the English-born Englishman, and a lovely dink from Haaland. A fine start to the season for Dortmund, but it hasn't escaped the pessimists that they already lag 5 goals behind Bayern after just one game.